You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino.
Well, time for us to check in with Jim Ellis, ellisinsight.com, for a look at the week in politics. Thank you, Jim, for joining us again.
It's always my pleasure. Thank you, Larry.
Lots going on. Candidates who want to win the U.S. Senate seat left vacant by late Dianne Feinstein debated earlier this week in San Francisco. I don't know if you had a chance to see some of this. The frontrunner, Burbank Congressman Adam Schiff, said California has a crime problem, primarily with flash mob-style robberies. Here's what he said.
And I think to take action against these smash and grab robberies, we need to invest more in community-based policing. We need to have the kind of joint task forces that the governor has approved.
Throwing out some buzzwords there, but not exactly acknowledging the Democrats' role in all that's been going on in California. Very typical.
No, in fact, he's doubling down on it. That community policing is just code for defunding the regular police. And he's got an ad out saying the same thing and talking about, oh, how these wonderful bureaucrats are going to solve the crime issue. And it's absurd. So not only is he not being stronger on crime, he's really doubling down on defunding police, because that's this community policing is supposedly the alternative to a regular police force.
Republican Steve Garvey said he blames career politicians for California's increase in crime.
It's never been more crime in the streets of California than today. And my opponents here, career politicians, it's been on their watch.
Yeah, in fact, some statistics came out saying crime really is high out here. I mean, politicians have been trying to say, no, everything's low. It's just, you're just seeing things. Don't trust what you see. But crime is a problem, isn't it?
No, there's no question about it. And it's the thing that people see. And that's like the crisis in the grocery store, crime on the streets. Those are the things that generally move numbers. Now, we had this New York special election for the Santos seat on Long Island, which those issues did work in 2022 when Santos won the seat. But they went back to their normal voting behavior in the special election. And it seems to me that, once again, we're seeing a big disconnect as to who people say they'd prefer to handle these issues than who they're voting for. Now, this district performed as it would normally. That election was a normal vote. A 54-46 Democrat win is really what it would typically do. So the Republican message isn't getting through. Now, they were overwhelmed with money. The Democrats had way more money. But the big issue in that district then was the border. Well, you know, I mean, it's one thing to say, yeah, that's an important issue. It's another thing to be a vote driver. And an issue that's 2,000 miles away, you don't have the actual, if you would say, site effect that you do of issues like crime and grocery prices. So I think, once again, we see what we might call from the old movie Cool Hand Luke, a failure to communicate.
Yeah.
Because they're not driving these messages home in a way that is a vote driver for the Republican or conservative base, as abortion is for the Democrat base.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go back to the debate. One last thing. My eyes rolled when I saw this section in which Bay Area Congresswoman Barbara Lee was asked about her proposal for a $50 per hour national minimum wage. Here's what she said.
$127,000 for a family of four is just barely enough to get by.
So let's just raise the minimum wage. Let's just drive everything up. There's a real disconnect as far as what that would do to inflation and the economy. You start putting more money out there like that, businesses couldn't afford a $50 minimum, could they?
No, heavens no. It's not just what it would do to inflation. It was what's it going to do to the job market? I mean, sure, she could say, oh, let's pay everybody $50 an hour. That sounds wonderful. But who's going to afford that in terms of a business? That means you're going to lose jobs. You're going to lose businesses. Small business people can't afford that. It's absurd.
Oh. Can you say automation? Can you say AI?
I mean,
it would help pay for it. There's already Flippy, the hamburger maker machine at the places you're looking at.
Yeah.
And this just drives it there. There's no entry point for people to go get a job to start out anymore. When I was a kid, $4.25 an hour, I knew I wasn't breaking the bank when I got my first job, but I learned a lot of things, and you can take that on to the next one. Now they treat jobs like it's a be-all, end-all. You know, get that job flipping burgers, and you should have protections and be able to, you know, have a family of four and live your life and do no more education for yourself, reach no higher. That's the Democrat view.
Yes, exactly. And really, it's also to drive out a lot of businesses, too. I think they want more centralized. Again, it's all based on centralized government. Government should dictate what businesses can exist and how much they're going to make. And so it's all right consistent with their thoughts in terms of how society should be run.
Right, right. You've got these lawmakers that already got the $20 minimum wage for the burger places passed, and you've already seen businesses, you know, announce they're going to do their cutbacks. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas impeached by Republicans this week in a historic House vote after failing last week.
On this vote, the yeas are 214 and the nays are 213. The resolution is adopted.
They were able to do it because House Majority Leader Steve Scalise was back in Washington after receiving cancer treatments, giving Republicans the necessary votes to overcome their razor-thin majority and get the impeachment over the finish line. What happens next? There's a debate about whether this is good, bad. On the Senate side, it's not going to go very far because the Republicans have they're in the minority there. Democrats won't let there be a conviction, right?
No, and the next step should be a trial in the Senate for him. But my guess is that won't even happen because I'm sure Schumer's not going to schedule it. I'm sure he can figure a way to delay it so they don't have to have it. But, you know, I think it was still a good statement here, and at least they got the vote count right this time, so they knew who was in town, I guess, better than they did in the last vote. So they were able to keep everybody on board, too, which was a bit surprising. So,
yeah. All right, what else is going on in the world of politics? What are you watching?
Well, we're headed towards the South Carolina primary. I think that ends the Republican side. Nikki Haley continues to perform badly in polling. We had a new one out showing her down 65 to 30 in her home state. And if she loses her home state in a substantial manner, as it looks like she will, I don't see how she can continue. And I still wouldn't be shocked if a day before or 2 days before the primary, she pulls out of the race to avoid what should be an embarrassment. And this doesn't do her much good for what I'm sure are her future plans of running again in 2028.
Yeah. I remember Kasich out of Ohio. Seemed like he kind of stayed in a couple elections ago, the race for a while, and it's like, you don't have a chance, but you're still staying in, right? I mean, there's some people who just do that, don't they?
Oh, yes. And I'm not sure what they think they gain. I'm not sure what she thinks she's gaining at this point. And you know, if you look at the Super Tuesday state, the Morning Consult Group ran surveys in six of those key Super Tuesday states on March 5th is that election. Trump is the worst number Trump has in those in the Republican primaries is 75. So how she thinks she can overcome his huge lead is, I think, a fallacy. So it's surprising to me that she's still hanging around.
Right.
She, of course, being Nikki Haley.
Since we talked last, Biden got the report out on the lack of handling the documents that he took home as a senator and vice president, and it had a kind of a scathing rebuke of, after interviewing him, that he's kind of an old man who would come across sympathetic to a jury, but someone with some memory issues. That didn't go well with Democrats. Of course, he held a quick presser that night and flubbed a lot of things in that, which didn't help him. Where are we on this story of Biden and his competency?
No, he certainly made it worse. I think it's one that won't go away. I mean, I think it's going to go away for the short time because now they're doing what the Democrats should have done at the beginning, is just keep their mouth shut. Again, it was just another way to have a two-tier justice system. I mean, the prosecutor kind of attacked Biden, but the key was he just let him off the hook, even though he said he willfully did this. On one hand, they're going after former President Trump for exactly the same issue. In fact, in Biden's case, it's even worse because, as you mentioned, he was taking documents when he was a senator, when he was chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, and vice president, and they don't have that type of protection that the president does. So that to me is, some people say, well, it's really a different issue. Yes, it is. Biden's is worse. And, of course, they let him off the hook and then go after Trump. So I thought it was a lot of it was subterfuge just to once again to let the Biden administration go off scot-free.
Where are we on the unraveling Fannie Willis and the hiring of her alleged boyfriend?
Well, the judge has scheduled now a two-day hearing on the whole issue. So that could be interesting.
Yeah. That
conference, so that is moving forward, and the state senate has taken impeachment action on her. So that one is actually moving forward. They're doing what they can there.
Yeah, and then we should have a ruling pretty soon on whether Trump can be on the ballot in Colorado, and that would knock that down in other states. The word on the street from those who listened to the arguments before the Supreme Court last week was that the court, even the Democrats, seemed awfully skeptical of one state being able to determine the outcome of an election, on a national election, and they even called out the attorney to name other national races officials where this has been done before, and he couldn't, right?
No, of course, because it's never happened before. And if, the oral arguments appeared to go well for Trump, but we'll see. Sometimes you never know, especially with that court.
If the Supreme Court were to come down with a decision that, yeah, Colorado can do that and the other states stepped in, what kind of reaction would that have across the country?
Oh, I think it would be big. I think actually Robert sort of hit it on the head that a lot of these Democrat states would remove Trump. But, you know, I think you would see move out of Texas, like Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick called for the removal of Biden from the ballot for his performance on the border and endangering that state. I think Roberts is actually correct. You would start seeing that.
Thus, another constitutional crisis. All right.
Yeah.
Jim Ellis, ellisinsight.com. We're getting close. The ballots have arrived here in Southern California, and people are encouraged to vote and get them back in, right?
Yes, sir, from the March 5th primary. California is one of five states that's having their full primary that day. And two of the others are Texas and North Carolina. So we've got a big day on March the 5th. Some three big states having their full primary.
Jim Ellis.
So it's not just the presidential race.
EllisInsight.com. Thank you for your wise counsel.
Thank you.
You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino.
My guest is David Serpa. He is a candidate for elective office in the Inland Empire, and he's joining us right now. David, it is the which district? 39th?
It is the 39th district.
Yeah, and that encompasses what area?
Riverside, Parupa Valley, Moreno Valley, and Paris.
All right. You're a Republican running for office.
Yes, sir.
Against Takano, right?
That's correct.
And being the only Republican, you picked up some endorsements, right? Tell us who is endorsing you.
I've been endorsed by Sheriff Bianco, District Attorney Mike Kestrin, Drain the Swamp USA, Moms for Liberty, our only Republican city councilman, Chuck Conder, a whole bunch of great people.
All right. We'll get into the issues.
Stand Up Riverside.
Oh, okay. Yes.
The Riverside Republican Assembly, a whole group of people. Yep.
And where is, what's the website if people want to learn more about you? I know the ballots are out there. If they're in that district, they'll see your name. Again, it is David Serpa, but do you have a website?
David Serpa for Congress. That's forcongress.com.
All right, got it. One endorsement.
See all my podcasts there. Yep. They can see all my videos, stances, et cetera.
One endorsement you haven't received yet is from the official Republican Party, even though you're the only Republican on there. So you would welcome that if they'd like to do it, but they haven't yet, have they?
Oh, yeah, I would welcome playing nice in the sandbox with a group of people that want to actually win elections, that want to create a winning organization out of the Republican Party. But unfortunately, that's not what we have here in our local central committee.
Expand just a little bit about the challenge of politics. Politics and is the intersection of money, isn't it, and desire?
It absolutely is. It is a pay-to-play system. And the last time there were six Republicans running for this seat against Mark Takano. This time I'm the only one, and it's because we've met with the other Republicans. We've sat down with them one-on-one. We have one who's actually running, working on the campaign alongside me, because we need great Republicans, and we need to have them run for seats that we need people for. but it doesn't do us any good to have six people running against one Democrat. And so the first thing that the local Republican Party did was send me out to meet with political consultants and campaign managers. And all of them, the first question that they would ask me is, how much equity do you have in your house? They said, we need about $100,000 to $150,000 to get started. And there's three ways I get paid, $50,000, a win bonus, a $5,000 a month, plus I get a campaign overage on all your gear. I actually had one consultant who's a mayor, and they said to me, I want to run your campaign, but I want you to pay me $75,000. And I don't think you'll win this time, but I will get paid whether you win or lose. And if you lose and you don't pay me, I will sue you and I will win. Huh. And she actually spoke up against me at the Central Committee meeting. And, you know, it's one of the reasons why I'm not endorsed.
Wow. All right. Let's talk about winning this election. What's going on? Tell me about your district, where the voters are, a little bit about yourself. Let's kind of start at the beginning. If I were meeting you on an elevator and we had about 30 seconds to get from the ground floor to whatever floor we were going on, and you introduced yourself, what would you say in that 30 seconds?
I'm a Marine Corps combat veteran. I'm a businessman. I'm an author of a book called Common Sense for California, A Guide to the New Revolution. And, you know, I'm desperately working to save my country, my home state. And I believe that common sense, a little bit of common decency, will help us find some common ground. And that's around water, energy, defense, healthcare, and education. And I think that 90% of us can unite around the things that will make this state and this country great.
All right. I always ask, what's the number one problem? Is there a number one problem that you could address?
The number one problem would be water and energy. Everything flows downhill from there. We're a water-rich state. We have an 800-mile coastline that we could line with desalination plants and power with nuclear energy. We're rich in uranium, lithium, natural gas, oil, and yet we're continuing to act like we are poor. And it's time that we blow the roof off of this system and start actually investing in America.
Yeah. Talk a bit about that, because I'm sure you've looked at the problem. I certainly have. It seems like you've got these progressives that have drunk the Kool-Aid on supposed climate change and the role California must take based on their, quote, existential threat, unquote, that they say. And that causes them to do stuff that's a little wacky, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you look at, simple thing like nuclear energy and versus solar and wind. Nuclear energy was powering 32% of the grid in California before Governor Newsom started decommissioning nuclear power plants like the San Onofre power plant. And the problem is not that nuclear energy is not efficient. It's that it's too efficient. That's why they're using it on our our submarines and on our aircraft carriers. They use nuclear energy and they desalinize their water. And so that's something that we can absolutely do in this country and in this state, but they're capitalizing on scarcity instead of banking on abundance with these resources.
Yeah, we're also sitting on some tremendous amounts of petroleum underground, right? I mean, we've got
absolutely
great oil reserves, but they don't want to touch it. And as I've had guests on this program, they call us California an energy island. They really haven't built out infrastructure to even pipe oil our way. We're reliant on ships that come sailing across the ocean from the war-torn Middle East, right?
That's correct. And in fact, L.A. is built on an oil field. Kern County is rich in oil. California is one of the top five oil-rich states in this country. And this is a very oil-rich country. That's how L.A. was built. And in fact, there's oil drilling happening all over Los Angeles. There's a synagogue that is actually a facade. It's not an actual real synagogue where they're drilling oil. There is a parking structure and there's a building. I believe it's on 3rd and Pico where they're drilling for oil inside of there. Oh, and there's actually a monument dedicated to children that are fighting for their lives called the Tower of Hope. And inside the Tower of Hope, there is a big oil drill.
Drill, baby,
so we
drill.
Like we're not doing these things. Drill, baby. If we're going to do it, let's do it and stop pretending like we're not doing it.
Yeah. The other thing is, for some reason, candidates in this state get real wimpy when it comes to acknowledging the strengths of some of our national figures. Some of the things that Donald Trump has done right. They run.
Oh, sure.
They run away from
him. Oh, sure.
Why?
Oh, sure. Well, because, you know, and this is a problem with the state in general. You know, we run a lot of weak candidates. We run whoever the cat gets, you know, drags in, because the machine depends on these political consultants getting paid. And so President Trump did a lot of things that were very dangerous to a lot of these machines that exist, like the military industrial complex and then, you know, the Department of Defense that's run wild. You know, he started disentangling and disengaging from a lot of these wars and foreign conflicts, which is, you know, as a combat veteran, that's what I want to see our commander in chief doing, is advocating towards peace in this world, not escalating conflicts, which I knew President Biden was going to do, which is why I organized an Inauguration Day peace rally on January 20th. But the California Highway Patrol actually pulled our permits because of January 6th. They said they were worried that the same thing was going to happen in our state's capital.
Mm. All right, we are talking with David Serpa. He is a candidate for office. Remind everybody the office you're running for.
I'm running for Congress right here in California in Riverside County against Mark Takano, who, of course, was made famous in Matt Walsh's documentary, What is a Woman? He debated on the House floor whether or not Mike Tyson should be able to compete with other women if he were to identify as a woman. And he also debated against the Parents' Bill of Rights on the House floor.
By the way, the Parents' Bill of Rights subject has really become front and center in several Southern California school districts, hasn't it? There is something going
on. That's right.
A real culture war taking place.
There is a grassroots demand for parents' rights and a return to value within our education system. And fortunately, Assemblyman Bill Astaly, who I believe is a gem, you know, and a huge value and an asset to the state up in Sacramento. And he's trying to get these things passed at the state level, but they won't hear it. And so he returned it back to the parents and said, get this passed in your local school boards. And then that way parents have rights from the ground up instead of it coming from the top down from Sacramento. And he said, I'll provide you with the legal team that will back you up in the event that you guys decide to pass this and there are any issues. So we have a lot of really great leadership. We have some great leadership. We have some great Republicans, but unfortunately, not enough of them are willing to get their knuckles bloody, so to speak, yeah, because they're afraid that their funding is going to get pulled out from underneath them, and they're ultimately worshiping the dollar instead of serving the people.
Well, you get these school districts who get some really good conservatives on there, and they come through with the Parents' Bill of Rights, and the next thing you know, they're served with recall notices. I mean, there is a real battle being funded on that side, on their side, to try to block this stuff, isn't there?
Absolutely. Well, there's a battle that's coming really from the state. You know, Newsom, you know, it doesn't like that something gets passed, and so he serves somebody with papers, and, you know, it's lawfare is what it is. And, you know, here in the Temecula Valley, they were on the receiving end of some of this. And the important thing is that people are, of course, getting involved in their elections. They're realizing how important these things are. But ultimately, we need to realize it should not be a left versus right thing. It's not me against my neighbor. I love my neighbor. I just want to make sure that we have a safe space for our children to develop, where we're actually focusing on the things that they're supposed to be learning and bringing back in arts and music, which is what we voted for. But then Governor Newsom cut the next year in the schools. You know, the trades, licensing, certificate programs. There's so many opportunities for young people to learn how to work with their hands and their bodies, but they don't want them being competent and capable of feeding themselves and their family when they graduate from high school. They want them dependent on the system and driven into college, which doesn't ultimately serve everyone.
No, it doesn't. And, of course, the dependent class just grows more government funding, and then that attracts Democrats. Okay. David Serpa, I got 30 seconds here. Put in a plug for yourself. What is the website? You want people to vote? Go ahead.
Absolutely. My name is David Serpa. I appreciate everybody listening, and I would appreciate your monetary support at davidserpaforcongress.com or your military support with your boots on the ground, getting involved in our campaign. We're trying to pull off the biggest upset in the country and flip a heavy Democrat district.
David, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you, Mr. Marino.
You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino. AM 590, The Answer. You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino.
Coming up, there is a DA's race on the March 5th ballot. And, of course, there's also something else that's growing here. An effort to reverse Proposition 47. We're going to talk about all that with former L.A. County DA Steve Cooley, who's joining us right now. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Oh, glad to be with you, Larry.
I understand you have come out with your choice, your pick. There's like 10 or 11 people running against Gascon, aren't there?
Right. There are 11 challengers against the incumbent, George Gascon. I have, I am endorsing and working very hard for Nathan Hochman, who's a former assistant U.S. attorney. He worked in the Justice Department back in Washington, D.C. He's incredibly well-prepared to take over this job and fix all that Gascon has done in terms of the damage to that office and the criminal justice system.
Yeah, and we'll get into some of that damage in just a second, but I want to jump to the headline that we saw the other day and get your take on it. This is about two of the nation's largest retailers and a pair of Democratic mayors are supporting a campaign to roll back California's landmark criminal justice reform, which has been blamed for the spike in retail theft. This is a Bloomberg article that says Walmart and Target are the top funders of a proposed ballot measure that aims to undo Proposition 47. That's the voter-approved law from 2014 that reduced penalties for many, they call them lower-level drug and property crimes in the state. Set this up. What are we talking about? You remember Prop 47 very well. It even had some sort of deceptive title, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. 2014, Prop 47 passed, and it passed because it was mistitled by the then Attorney General, Kamala Harris. It was the Safe Streets and Neighborhoods Act, an incredibly false title. All it was an opportunity to eliminate some theft crimes, reduce all hardcore drugs from felonies to misdemeanors. Which means that tool of arrest is taken away from law enforcement effectively. And basically, everyone talks about raising the threshold of the amount for grand theft of $950. I think that's the least of it. It was the changes in the theft laws, eliminating petty theft with a prior, and some other inartful language. You've got to remember, George Gascon drafted this. He was the author. Quite frankly, someone else drafted it for him because he's not that capable. But he was the main author and sponsor, the only district attorney to support Prop 47. He was aided and abetted by that false, misleading title by Kamala Harris, and the voters fell for it. Now it's played out. People know how bad it is, and there's this effort to try and fix it.
Yeah, and you know, you and I talked about how things can get so bad. Finally, even those on the far left kind of realize something's got to change. We got two people here. It's gained the support of San Francisco Mayor London Breed and San Jose Mayor Matt Mahan, who represent two of the most liberal cities in the U.S. Their backing reflects a growing, quote, frustration felt by the public and city leaders with the consequences of Proposition 47. That, of course, is a nice way of putting it. They refer to it as being well-intentioned and all this stuff, but what is Proposition 47?
Prop 47 was not well-intended.
No, no, it
was designed to minimize potential sentencing and arrest for various theft offenses and, importantly, to make it very difficult for law enforcement to enforce or arrest for simple drug possession by changing them from felonies to misdemeanors,
right,
which changes the rules for arrest. And that is a great harm because a lot of thieves out there, we know, they're addicts, and they get popped for a drug possession. Then they have an opportunity to go to court and maybe fix themselves. And if they don't, they have an opportunity to go to jail to stop their criminal conduct. And that's what Prop 47 did. It took that away, but in great measure, you can blame two people, actually three people, Kamala Harris, George Gascon, and George Soros.
Yeah, and it has really brought unsafe streets and neighborhoods to the state. And, you know, is an outpouring this, the smash and grabs, is that anything or is that a separate issue? What do you think?
I think that's prompted a lot by the general sense of it's okay to be lawless in this day and age. And but it's not just Prop 47, because obviously the thieves are stealing well in excess of $950, and they're using tactics that, quite frankly, have worked relatively well if you're a thief. You get in, steal a lot of high-end stuff, and you get out before law enforcement or anyone else can really do much about it. You know, they're wearing their hoodies and masks and this and that. Car license, cars are stolen, the ones they get away in. License plates are covered up. No, this is just a new form of organized crime.
Yeah.
It's not, I wouldn't blame Prop 47 for that. I would blame the general atmosphere of laws aren't being enforced in a lot of jurisdictions, particularly Los Angeles County.
Okay, back to Prop 47 and the effort to change that. This California ballot measure would allow prosecutors to add up separate thefts to surpass the $950 threshold for felony charges. It would ramp up sentencing for people working as a group to steal goods or for taking more than $50,000 in property. Additionally, the reform would authorize prosecutors to charge drug users with a felony on a third offense, in a move supporters say is meant to force people addicted to drugs into rehabilitation programs. I know you've got a lot of opinions here, and nothing's perfect, but is this better than what we have?
Oh, it is tremendously better than what we have. It's a major improvement. You know, maybe if I were king, I would throw a few more things in there to toughen it up. But I think it's a great step in the right direction. What you have is a coalition of nonpartisan entities, of businesses, you know, big stores, prosecutors, law enforcement organizations, and now Democrat mayors, whose cities have suffered from the effects of Prop 47, they're all joining together. This is going to be a major nonpartisan effort, and hopefully, and I pray, that our current Attorney General doesn't mistitle it like Kamala Harris mistitled Prop 47.
Yeah. The initiative needs 546,651 valid signatures to qualify for the November 2024 election. It currently has more than 360,000, according to a statement this week by backers of the effort. Walmart, which has donated $1 million to the ballot initiative, said it supports policies intended to improve safety for its employees, customers, and communities. A spokesman for Target, which has given $500,000, declined to comment and referred the question to the California District Attorneys Association. So, interesting. It's got some money. It's enough to get the signatures.
It's got some money. It basically has very generally attractive provisions. It has the California DA Association behind it. So that way there's a sort of a statewide network that can get the word out. And I think it's going to have a broad bipartisan support because I think anyone with any common sense, and it's not some sort of left-wing radical like Gascon, knows that laws such as this are going to be a great improvement over what we currently have. That's why you see the mayors of San Jose and San Francisco jumping in. They know that it's a big issue and it should be a priority. They see their cities suffering. They want to stop it. If they want a law that will help to stop it. Now, laws are one thing. You still need the right people out there enforcing it. That means your chief prosecutor, your district attorney, in your respective county. And in this regard, people really have to vote to get rid of Gascon. There's 11 challengers. You vote for any one of them. I'm personally recommending Nathan Hochman. I think he's a winner, smart, and is the best qualified. But getting a new person in there as LA County DA would be a huge improvement in addition to this change in the law.
Yeah. Is there any polling on just where Gascon rests here on his numbers?
The polling, most recent polling from a very reliable pollster indicates that Gascon's favorability rating among likely voters is only 14%. His unfavorability is 48%. So he is wildly unpopular, wildly disfavored, and very well known. That does not bode well for him at all. Now, in terms of the 11 challengers, I don't think the public has really been able to figure out who's who and who they would choose. But I think they will be aided by the current wave of advertising that many of the candidates are engaging in. They'll be able to sort them out, and then they'll vote, and whoever is also nominated, because Gascon will likely be nominated with 14, 15, 16%. It's a very good chance he'll be nominated, but whoever else is nominated will slaughter Gascon in November.
Is there any worry that the other side, and I know they're independents, and it's really not a political, seat with a party thing, they're going to kind of split it so much that nobody gets that much? Or is it okay if they do? I mean, don't these things...
It doesn't really matter. As long as Gascon doesn't get 50% plus one,
right,
which I doubt that it will, he'll fall far short of that. The fact you got 11 candidates, it's not a matter you're splitting and taking away from one individual. No, they all have their lane and the issues they think are important, and maybe a constituency of one sort or another, and a good campaign or not a good campaign, and they'll all, in a sense, be working together to keep Gascon down and out.
Mm.
So it's a good effort. I just think that we, one, want to beat Gascon, but two, we want a great replacement. We want someone who can do the job, reflect the will of the people in terms of having appropriate, accurate justice achieved and appropriate prosecution consistent with enforcement of the laws. That is something they do not have right now.
Steve Cooley, former L.A. County D.A., appreciate your time with us. And, when you just feel it, when you go out to your car, you want to make sure it's still there for one thing, but, you look over your shoulder and somebody coming after you, they're going to whack you and take your wallet or follow you home.
We got to change that, Larry. We got to change that. I think the voters will.
Appreciate it. Steve Cooley with us, former L.A. County D.A., weighing in on efforts to change Prop 47 and select a new D.A. Do things that would be helpful, he says. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Larry.
You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino.
Coming up, Daniel Guss is joining us. You can find him on Substack. It's Daniel Guss with two S's. And he's on Twitter at The Guss Report. Thank you so much as we talk about things going on across the state in Southern California. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you, and always a pleasure to be back.
So we have an unfinished series of towers down near Staples Center that just happened to have graffiti go up many of the floors, like 20 of the floors. And The city, the best they can do is saying, you need to clean that up. And that's all they want to say about it. They're not saying that, we could take this back and build it out as homeless housing. No, right next to Staples Center, are they? Well, it's not Staples Center now. It's got a new name, right? Crypto.com.
Crypto.com, a.k.a. Appropriately nicknamed The Crypt.
Ouch. Yeah. Your take on this. First, who knows how the deals were worked to get this thing built?
Well, yes, we do know how it, we do know how it was built. By the politicians who kept boxes and boxes of cold, hard American cash in their closets, or were gambling at the high-end exclusive casinos in Vegas and flying on private jets. The little nitty-gritty is what's known only by the participants and the federal government. Thank God for the federal government in this case. But it's so inconvenient now, and how magnificently ironic that this big secret is across from crypto.com arena, where it is the face of how corrupt downtown LA has become.
And you get it unfinished, 5 years worth. You get taggers who go and tag it up, and people are just shocked by that. And the city's answer to that is to tell the developers they need to clean it up.
Yeah. And where are you going to find the developers? Are you going to go over to Shanghai and then send them a telegram to tell them, hey, you need to clean this up? They know this is there, and they would certainly like to have the value that they put into it, but they don't want to deal with the consequences of how it got built. And, of course, a certain newspaper in Southern California, which recently had big layoffs, wants us to consider that it's art, when in fact it's really graffiti.
I saw that piece that was in the L.A. Times where the author of the article said it brought a smile to his face as they looked up and saw this. You know, for anyone who has a business in Southern California that is routinely tagged and has to incur the cost of cleaning it up, you know, how dare the Times sit there and make that art when it's the destruction and downfall of our city, another symptom of it? It's not art. It's disgusting.
No. I mean, now to be clear, I don't have the talent it takes to make graffiti, but art it isn't. It certainly takes a skill, but that's really stretching the definition of art, and that's why I think there is such a lack of sympathy going on with the LA Times layoffs. It's because even though they switched out their executive editor a couple of weeks ago, they brought in a new executive editor from the New York Times, the Seattle newspaper, and the ACLU. So basically, they're just changing at the LA Times the names on the door rather than the substance of the content.
Rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. And another article in that same paper, left-hand side, comparing Donald Trump to Biden and gaffes and having a difficult time seeing a difference.
Yeah, you know what? These are the last desperate gasps of a drowning campaign. I think that everywhere they look, you know, for whatever idiosyncrasies people can criticize Donald Trump for, there was not this pure chaos on the border, on the soap and shampoo aisle of Target and Walmart. There isn't this canceling of people simply because they have a difference of opinion, which is really rather ironic that it seems now that the mainstream media and perhaps Attorney General Merrick Garland, it seems that they are taking their cues from the most powerful dark corners of Washington, D.C., and it appears that they are now attempting to cancel Joe Biden for basically being the Manchurian candidate that he's become.
Yeah. But then you get the holdouts. You remember who was famous for saying the border is secure every time he was home? Alejandro Mayorkas.
Oh, yes.
He's carrying, I hope he doesn't hurt his back carrying the water for, Biden, because he was on TV recently blasting the Justice Department for the reports on Biden. Here's a little bit of what he had to say.
The special counsel made gratuitous, unnecessary, and inaccurate personal remarks, and those are improper.
If they're inaccurate, they're not going far enough, is if they're inaccurate. It's not the other way around. And of course, he has, of course, said up to this point that the border is secure. Well, he's now saying there is a problem at the border, but he blames Republicans, right? They always blame Republicans.
Right. And I think he said over the weekend or in the past couple of days, he said, we do not accept responsibility for this. You're the cabinet secretary. You're the cabinet secretary. You're the person who is most responsible for this, Secretary Mayorkas. And that brings us to the point of, if there's a phrase, a Latin phrase in legal circles called falsus in unum, falsus in omnibus. If someone is determined to be lying about one thing, you can reasonably infer that they're lying about everything. And it goes from the cabinet secretaries to the press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre. How can you see when they tell the truth if it appears that most times they're lying for all reasons or any reason or no reason?
Exactly. All right, back to Los Angeles. Are you at risk of eviction in L.A.? There is help available. The L.A. Times going out of their way to tell the people who haven't been paying their rent how they might take advantage of legal services to continue not paying their rent when there are people willing to pay their rent and there are private citizens who own property and should have the right to evict people. It shouldn't take 6 months to kick somebody out who's not paying their rent. What does it come to if you're a landlord, if you're a retired couple and you've got a place in Los Angeles? You're going to get taken advantage of by people who will overstay their free welcome. They're not welcome free, but as a fallout to COVID, they got away with it for a long time, didn't they?
Yeah. You know, and it's tragic. It is as close to a perfect example of the government seizing property from one party to essentially give or lend it to another. It's like, okay, if you want to help renters, provide services to help them find out what their rights are, but where is the government helping landlords who are being abused? And a lot of these landlords are not the corporate landlords. They may own one property and they may have four units and they live in one of them. Well, what happens when the bank comes to them and demands the rent from them for their mortgage? It's borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, and the incompetence who we have in local government at the city, at the county, at the smaller cities and the state level, they're only considering the occupants and not the very likelihood that a lot of these landlords are mom and pop businesses, and they're going to lose their savings.
Exactly.
So I don't see how it's the government's role to literally take from one and give to the other when these are not wealthy corporations.
Yep. Then we talk California a second. We're supposed to be thankful that Governor Newsom has higher goals, because that's causing him to try to clean up some of his soft on crime policies. There's a story in the Washington Examiner that he has brought in prosecutors to Oakland to try to tighten up what is rampant and out of control crime there. And he talks about bipping, which I had to look up what that is. That's the breaking into cars to take stuff. Your thoughts about new words being developed to describe crimes and Governor Newsom trying to repair his image by getting tough. Did you also hear his story that he was in a Target and there was a smash and grab, and he almost acted like a Karen, saying, get a manager over here.
Yeah. Governor Newsom, for some reason, was in Target and had like $340 worth of merchandise in his cart, when in fact somebody was walking out with armfuls of merchandise and was confused as to why nobody stopped them. Well, it's because this has been a cancer on the retail business for years under his self-deluded leadership, if you want to call it that. And bipping, just breaking into it, it's led to another concept in the Bay Area, where owners of cars have left the trunks of their cars unlocked and open so that people wouldn't break the locks or smash the windows to take valuable items that aren't there.
Open trunking.
Go ahead.
Open trunking. So
exactly.
And you have to learn how to turn the light bulb off back there, right? So you don't end up without,
so you don't drain the battery.
Right?
And it's the same thing that led to the first ever closure of an In-N-Out in Oakland and the closure of a popular Denny's in Oakland.
Right.
It's one thing after another. And I can say that the one best thing about Los Angeles right now is that we're not Oakland. If you need to find a slogan, maybe we can use that.
We're not Oakland yet. But here, the thing that really hurts is that In-N-Out in closing put out a statement saying it's not that we weren't profitable. We were. It's not that we weren't popular. We were. It's just we're not going to risk the lives of our customers with break-ins, whether they're in our store or our employees. What a slam on our state and our governor and the policies of this state. Now, the governor will say, hey, look, $900, that's the 10th highest amount you can take. That's pretty good. Remember that some quote he made about that, the $900 stealing? Come on. It ought to be $200. Do something about it right then on the spot. But they don't.
Right. And none of this three or four or five times, and you do the figure of how many crimes they committed towards how much was the actual value. Because it won't matter if you have prosecutors like we're struggling with here in Los Angeles. And let me say, when we're talking prosecutors, I am only talking about the elected officials like a George Gascon or Chesa Boudin, who was kicked out of San Francisco from the district attorney's office. The frontline prosecutors in Los Angeles who actually charge the killers, the molesters, the serial felony of theft. It's those frontline prosecutors who are the last guard here, and they're battling these far, far leftist prosecutors like Gascon and Boudin and the person up in Oakland, and it's something that needs to stop now.
All right, Daniel Gus, thanks much. Appreciate it.
Anytime, Larry.
You're listening to Politics and Issues with Larry Marino. AM 590.